Hello, all of you. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate your practice and your participation in this online channel for study of Buddhism. I know it's been a while now. I've been doing a lot of Gosho, interspersed with other topics of Buddhism, but we're getting close to the end of my collection of Gosho, so you can see where I'll put up on this video a connection to the bookstore where you can get any of or the entire collection of the six books I've put together with my concerted attempt to remove cultural bias from these translations without trying to make the meaning of Nichiren's words and Buddhism more clear to a contemporary audience, not changing the sentences or paragraphs, just specific words that can mislead us into thinking wrongly about Buddhist thought. So at any rate, I was thinking about this morning. It's interesting that, it's often the subject of letters by Nichiren, how when we practice correctly, for many reasons, one of which is that we see life and our culture and our environs and our lives, our thinking becomes more clear what's going on. It's kind of like if you live in a cold country, you're familiar with driving with the windows of a car kind of obfuscated by fog for a while until you can acclimate the car so you can see out of it. For those who have never lived in snow, picture a fog, dense fog. It's hard to see where you're going. That's pretty much our normal samsaric state, if you will. And then when things start to clear up, or when the defroster works well, and you start to see through the windshield and the windows of the car, or in fog where you start to be able to see more distantly things around you, that's a lot like practice of enlightenment, awakening, right? But there's still fog around. There's still snow around. And so even though for a moment you can see clearly in certain spots, you find yourself suddenly, because your attention is drawn to what you see clearly, you're tripping over simple things because those are still obfuscated and your attention isn't on those things. So it's an awkward analogy, but I think when we talk about Buddhism, the way that it enlightens us and awakens us, we sometimes miss that subtlety, and all of a sudden problems seem to arise from all sorts of places where we didn't expect it. But the thing is, we should expect it, because that's the nature of clearing a path, isn't it? We trip over ourselves because we're, number one, so clarified in certain aspects of our lives, and we start to figure stuff out, that we don't pay as much attention to the mundane silliness going on around us. And sometimes it can be more traumatic than just silly. It can be very difficult. And these are the obstacles we talk about all the time in our practice. Things become more obvious. And in fact, things that we've kind of glossed over for ages may suddenly require much more intense attention. That's not because they're new. That's because they're now ready to be remedied. And with our practice, we can easily step over and around them, change them completely, turn them into opportunities. So rather than being afraid and scared by these seemingly new obstacles, they're really opportunities for growth. We get so accustomed to doing this in Buddhism that we kind of feel bored when it doesn't happen. And I tell you, I've practiced enough years to know that when I start feeling that boredom, I know to redouble my attention, because because that just means that there are larger obstacles that maybe I haven't been aware of or seen for a long time in my life that are about to explode. I don't want to get too crazy with the analogy here, but those of you who practiced for a little while know exactly what I'm talking about. But don't be afraid if you're just starting out. It's the nature of any kind of study, really. I imagine that anyone studying carpentry, for instance, who really gets into carpentry, suddenly finds that they hammer their thumb more often than they ever have in their life. Well, you've multiplied your hammer swings by 100 million times what you used to do in your hobby days, right? So it's only obvious that you're probably going to run into that thumb once in a while. But you learn to not do that anymore quite quickly. So anyway, full of weird analogies this morning. So this letter was written to an ex-Tendai priest from Shijuku In Temple in Suruga Province, Jibubo Nichii. Used to be Tendai, then he took a resolve in Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra, and learned as his tutor one of Nichiren's senior disciples, Nishiji. This letter looks like it was written just a few years after the Yatsuhara persecution, so there were probably still a lot of animosity from the Nembutsu ruling clan and so forth. And Nichiren talks about how Dairokuta no Mao, this constant troublemaker that this personification of obstacles will take root in the ruler. Again, this sounds mystical, but it's really, as I was saying, it's just the ruler's been a problem all along, but now that you've made this huge commitment to your enlightenment, you've kind of called attention upon yourself, not because you're trying to, but because to the Nembutsu rulers, you're a problem, so certainly they're going to target you more. So you see how the nature of obstacles works. It's a part of the cleansing process, right? So let's get into this. One more note. Some of you have talked about the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras from Nagarjuna as a possible next topic once we finish the Gosho. And I hear you. I might try to something different with Nagarjuna just to explore his kind of thinking, or I might just do Perfection of Wisdom. But I've also thought that perhaps I need to revisit some of the early topics I've done on this channel about how to enshrine a mandala of Gohanzon, basics like that, Gangyo and that kind of thing. So chime in if any of you have an opinion on that. I don't know. I know I have a pretty good audience. We keep building our sangha here on this channel. And you guys are from all over the planet. So I don't know how long you guys have been practicing. Some of you have been practicing like me for 30, 40 or more years. Or used to practice and have come back around to it in a different way, hopefully largely due to our discussion in this sangha, which breathes new life into our practice without all of the impediments of organizations and memberships and all of that stuff. We are truly independent, but some of you are just starting out. Some of you have just discovered Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra and are excited by it and are brand spanking new. So I don't know what the ratio is. So only in the comments can I get a clue as to what that is. And if you need some greater assistance on just basic stuff, sound out, let me know. I'm here to serve you guys. And I don't say that altruistically. I say that this all is very important to my own practice. So you guys are my reward. But at the same time, for me to be effective and make this sangha attractive to you and your and others you might shakabuku or shoju or lead gently into this practice, or who have questions, or who come from other practices where they were turned off, and you want to convince them that our sangha is a much more relaxed and immediate space of understanding that makes sense, that isn't full of hocus pocus. You know, I want to help you guys expand your personal sangha, you know, expand our sangha, but certainly through your own region. Some of you are even starting study groups, let's call them that, mini sanghas or sub sanghas. I don't know. I don't want to get hung up on too much terminology, but it's the intent that I want to talk about. So if you guys need assistance and, you know, email me directly or put it in the comments so others can chime in, that'll give me more direction on what I can do to facilitate your tremendous practice. Okay. With all of that out of the way, PSA done, let's get into this letter. Reply to Jibobo. It must be a toe. Interesting. Of polished rice, some myoga buds, and one package of ginger. People who are present or who present the Buddha with the cherry blossoms of spring, the crimson leaves of autumn, the clear water of summer, and the snow of winter all become Buddhas. How then could one who makes the Lotus Sutra an offering of rice, which sustains life of the emperor, and which to the common people is more valuable than jewels, possibly fail to become a Buddha? So high praise for sending Nichiren, the votary of the Lotus Sutra, sustenance, right? So it's not just for Nichiren the man, but for Nichiren's mission of propagating the Lotus Sutra that all of these offerings are taken in. And so very high praise for doing that. In society, what people value are the words of the ruler and the words of their parents. One who disregards the instructions of one's parents is guilty of a lack of filial piety and will be abandoned by heaven. Heaven being our guiding sense of our minds, our samsaric minds. One who fails to do the bidding of the ruler of the country is a violator of the royal command and will have one's life taken away. Which Nichiren should know, because what he's doing is very much in the face of the ruling elite, isn't it? That's why they've banished him and tried to kill him, because he's not following their edicts, right? Cherishing the desire for enlightenment from inconceivably distant kalpas in the past, we have done such things as abandoning our countries, our wives and children, our own lives for the sake of attaining enlightenment in the future. When we thus draw near to achieving Buddhahood, and when we encounter the scripture entitled the Lotus Sutra of the Wonderful Law, that is the single vehicle, the Devil King of the Sixth Heaven, Lord of the Threefold World, reasons, quote, "If these persons should become Buddhas, I will suffer loss on two counts. First of all, if they free themselves from the threefold world, they will escape my control," right? The control of our lower worlds, hell, hunger, animality, humanity, and humanity. It's called different things. Second, if they become Buddhas, their parents and siblings will also depart from the Saha world. How can I stop this from happening? So he's talking about exactly what I prefaced with, these obstacles that seemingly crop up out of nowhere. They just have avoided our detection until we start to chant and start to pursue our Buddha nature. Which is why, just to back up a step, Nichiren is continuing to live and proselytize the Lotus Sutra. after all the attempts on taking his life and banishing him, it just hasn't worked out for the ruling elite, much to their chagrin. So this is why they take out their frustrations on those who follow Nietzsche. Because, gosh darn it, if we can't kill the source, let's kill the people who support him, right? Or cause them pain, or show them that they need to toe the line. And this would be what Nietzsche is personaging in the terminology of the Devil King, Daroku Tenomal, right? He then produces various emanations with which these take possession of our parents or the rulers of the country or become a respected monk and exhorts us to commit evil acts, makes threats, or resorts to flattery. Anything to convince us to stop chasing our Buddhahood, right? Or else he becomes a high-ranking monk, a great monk, a learned monk, or someone who upholds the precepts and with the flower garland or Agama Sutras or the Nembutsu or true word teachings attempts to turn us away from the Lotus Sutra, using deception to prevent us from becoming Buddhas. So he's saying these obstacles, they'll come from everywhere. They could come from a lover or a potential lover, fraternizing you and convincing, oh, you don't need to do that. Come with me, do this, right? It's the same old story. We've seen this in films about everything from drugs to inculcating into cults or you just name it. There's all kinds of samsaric enticements for IG, right? Immediate gratification. And we easily fall into those traps because we're just masses of desire. And anything that seems like it could satiate our desires is very hard to pull away from. So this is what the devil of the sixth heavens, all these lower life conditions, that's what all of this is about in Buddhism. Don't let those things control you, right? Rather, stave off your attraction to these devices and stay the course. Namo myoho renge kyo, myoho renge kyo. Even in these samsaric devices, like Nichiren says, if you're making love to your wife, try looking into each other's eyes and chant the Daimoku. I've tried it. It's not easy to do because you feel the battle of samsara and Buddhahood viscerally. But if you can achieve it, well, I'll let you find out for your... Mindfully, Nichiren does say this is between a married couple. So, yeah, I don't think there's ever been a time in history other than maybe the hippie season in the 70s, 60s and 70s, where free love was the proponent. We've had something similar recently with polyamory and all that. I don't know. I'll leave it to you to decide how awakened that is. And I don't want to bring this discussion down to mundane earthly contentions, right? The point is that all of it is samsaric. It points to our earthly desires, right? And whenever we can reapply that force, that pull of desire to the pull of awakening, we're doing tremendous leaps and bounds toward our Buddha nature. And that's what Nichiren would laud, right? But he's pointing to it in a different way here, that when it seems like these obstacles are coming out of the woodwork, that they've been there all along. They are the presence of obstacles to our Buddhahood. But understand that this all comes from within our own lives, right? We are all humans. We are all humans born of these conflicts, these energies that already exist within us. And certainly all other humans are not different in that nature than ourselves, right? So the fact that it looks like it comes from outside of us is the primary delusion. that we are all the same energy of conflicts, and that if it appears around us, it is because it is also within us. That's why changing that into a desire for our awakening is so essential, because it changes that karma, that energetic, kinetic energy of karma within our own lives, and by doing so affects the lives of those around us. Right? It's always this same lesson in Buddhism. This is why it's so critical to keep our attitude correct, our intent correct, toward our enlightenment, in other words. Because it's not only for ourselves that we're changing this karma, it's for our environment as well. Everything in our environment. And over time, it becomes more and more obvious how immediate that circuit is, right? At first, when you first start practicing, you get many aha insights, moments where you see it at play. But then, I mean, we get so accustomed to things as human beings that we go through a period of, I don't know, if this is this thing on? Is this thing working, right? But that's because we see so much more clearly through the fog. And now we have an expectation. Now that becomes a desire, right? It'll come. It always does. The fifth volume of the Lotus Sutra states that when the latter day of the law arrives, a great demon will first take possession of the bodies of the sovereign ministers and the common people and curse or strike and wound the votary of the Lotus Sutra. Well, that's already occurred. If this fails, he will appear as an immeasurable multitude of monks who, employing all the other sutras, attempt to win the votary over. Right? Let's get rid of the source. That's already happened. If this does not succeed, he will become, he being the Daroku Tenomao, a great priest himself who upholds the 250 precepts and the 3,000 rules of conduct and wheedle the sovereign and deceive his wife so that the votary is exiled or an attempt is made on his life. We may also refer to the detailed descriptions in the Never Disparaging chapter, of the seventh volume of the Teacher of the Law chapter, of the fourth volume and the Simile and Parable chapter of the second volume, as well as in the 40-volume Nirvana Sutra and in the Perfection Sutra, which differ not in the least from the conditions of the present day. In addition, the events in the area of Kajima in Suruga Province, especially as they affected you personally, must have brought these things to mind. Right? This is the Atsuhara persecution. And even though this was written a couple of years later, I'm sure there's still negative reactions and governmental forces putting pressure on people who still maintain their practice of Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra. In a way that bears no comparison with other matters, disobeying the prohibitions that one's parents or the sovereign may put forward regarding the Lotus Sutra will in fact constitute filial piety toward one's parents and accord with the meditations of the sovereign for peace. Furthermore, Japan is an unusual country, a country that respects the deities and honors the Buddhas. Right, this conundrum, if you will. There are no deities in Buddhism, but there's this very strong tradition in Japan of these deities, whether they're personifications or emotional attachments. They're very deep within the culture. Well, I would say that that's probably true of every country, but certainly it was true of Japan in shogunate samurai times, right? Nevertheless, because everyone from the sovereign on down to the common people hates Nichiren for propagating the Lotus Sutra, Though they may revere all the deities and make offerings to all the Buddhas, these meritorious acts only turn into great evil. This is like moxibustion causing the outbreak of virulent boils, or medicine turning into poison. The meditations they offer to all the Buddhas and deities turn into false, and the country itself is about to become the possession of foreign countries, right? The Mongols are invading. Moreover, for some time, I've been telling people that the time will come when those of high standing will all suffer agonies that are 100,000, 10,000, million times worse than those suffered by the Heike clan at the time of their destruction. A little Japanese history there. Sorry, my throat. I probably should drink something. By considering the magnitude of the punishment suffered by those who harbor enmity toward the Lotus Sutra, we can understand the magnitude of the benefits obtained by devoting oneself to it. For example, if one murders one's parents, then no matter how many causes for great good one may create, one's efforts will not be acceptable to heaven. But if one kills an enemy of the Lotus Sutra, even if that enemy should be one's father or mother, this great crime will turn into a cause for great good. Now don't misunderstand, that's not an okay stamp for murder. Don't understand it that way. Even if one should be an arch enemy of all the Buddhas of the three existences and the ten directions, if one believes in a single phrase of the Lotus Sutra, the Buddhas will not abandon one. With this in mind, please carefully consider the nature of this matter, because the messenger is in a hurry. I cannot write in detail, but I will write to you again with my deep respect, Nichiren. So I would surmise by that this young man is being somewhat besieged by the local authorities, people telling him just secede, just do what they tell you, play along, and he's conflicted, right? Because there's a lot of forces around him that are resisting. Certainly he's being tutored by one of the senior disciples of Nichiren. People see that. They see Nishiji showing up to town, spending a lot of time with Jiwoo, right? They see it. So he's someone to point out. And when the authorities come and stomp around the town and go, anybody causing trouble around here? Well, I've seen that senior priest come to Jibobo's house an awful lot. You know, he's probably getting a lot of crap for being a devout follower of Nichiren's. And so Nichiren is telling him, you got to toe the line, but you've also got to keep your Buddhahood intact. You've got to keep practicing, but understand how to work within the boundaries that you're dealing with. You know, don't poke the bear. Stay the course. But be politically savvy here. Understand the situation you're in. So that's a difficult line to walk. Most of us, thankfully, don't have to do that. But some of us may. Some of us may be in families that are very devoutly something that we can no longer accept, especially as you start to learn your path to Buddha, your awakening. Oh my gosh, so many of these other things, these religions, these paths, these cults, whatever, they become so obviously contrived, right? And it's hard to keep a civil tongue around that. Our every ounce in us wants to rebel against it. But understand that rebellion is a personal one, that at one time we may have fallen for or even been devout in those other things. You know, And changing that can be very revolutionary in our gut. We feel it. But on the one hand, we need to recognize that and we need to defeat that. And on the other hand, there's a great release and relief in finding our awakening of Buddha nature. We can redouble our effort, right? And really, really dedicate ourselves to our awakening. That's personal. But if our environment doesn't agree with that, you shouldn't feel as though you need to take out a sword and behead everything, everyone, because you know. Have some compassion for the fact that they do not. Let them see you evolve toward your enlightenment. Quietly, subtly, especially if it's in your household, your parents, your parents' parents, your in-laws, your wife, your husband, right? Please be careful. When the time is right, it will show itself. It will become personal. And then you can sit down and gently sway and inculcate. And as soon as that dam breaks and those people can come and join you in this mission, you will find that the reverberating waves will push away these obstacles far, far away from you and the people whom you've helped discover this path. That is the Bodhisattva way. Understand? Once again, so much appreciation for your participation. So proud of your practice. Please pay attention to your health. Take care. And use the comments section to ask me anything regarding Buddhism. And I will offer you the best answers and research that I can. Take good care. I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye. Hey, thank you for being here. Did you know there's a third way you can help support this channel? And it won't cost you a cent. Yep. If you are not able to be a patron on Patreon or use the PayPal me at .com at Sifu Sylvain because you don't have the financial fortune to help support this channel right now, you, as I say, always support this channel by watching. But you can also help us grow so that maybe one day we can get over 10,000 subscribers and YouTube will grace us with monetization. It's not a lot. But if you can make sure you're subscribed and share a video like a simple one, just go into the search criteria and type monk and you'll have a video that'll come up that's been up for years about what is a monk. You know, it's called monk, who, how, where, something like that. That might be a great introduction to somebody who doesn't understand what a monk is to begin with. It's a tool. Use this channel as a tool to help you with your Bodhisattva practice and share a video to somebody who you think, oh, I know somebody who'll benefit from watching this. And in that way, you can help us grow. And that's a really good way to help your practice along as well. So just wanted to drop that in on you in case that's something that you might find useful. Take care of yourself again, and I'll see you soon. Bye.